You're listening to 808s and Ankle Breaks on Amherst Wired. Check out other podcasts like The Polygonal Sunrise and The Zoo Report right here on the network. For more content, go to amherstwired.com. The student-run magazine has a variety of articles in both campus news and entertainment.
What's good, everybody? Welcome to 808s and Ankle Breaks, episode 41. It's the hip-hop and basketball-based podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jonathan Kerma, entertainment and podcast editor of the Amherst Wire, as well as a Hold My Drink sports contributor. With me is our other host,
Trevor Wilson, the assistant entertainment editor for the Amherst Wire, a.k.a. Patrick Trevorly. I had to do it to him. It's a beautiful day out here, folks. We got a good episode planned for you today, packed with tons of content. We got the usuals, but we're talking about a bit on both sides of the spectrum. So, Kerm, what do we got for them today?
So, yeah, first things first, we'll be talking about our 808s and Ankle Breaks March Madness bracket. The first round just ended, so we'll be giving you kind of the matchups. We'll also be doing slap or skip per usual. And for our main segments, for hip-hop, we'll be talking Rich the Kid, The World is Yours Too, as well as Nav's Bad Habits. We'll kind of be lumping those together. And then for the hoop side of things, we'll be talking about Lonzo Ball leaving Big Baller Brand. You know, I know we said we were done talking Lakers, but this is kind of a...
It's a little detached.
It's a little different, and it's still a big story. Very big story. And we'll also be kind of talking about these... the best way I could describe it is the what the f*** stat line, where it's anytime, you know, NBA players are putting up ridiculous numbers, sometimes you look at the stats and you're like, what the f***? So we're talking about getting those at the end of the regular season. I'm talking guys like James Harden. He just scored 60. He's been doing it all year.
Yeah.
But he just scored 60 again. Devin Booker just went off. Even Elfrid Payton, you know, he's been getting triple-doubles now instead of earlier in the season. So we'll be kind of discussing the importance of the end of the regular season. But let's start with the bracket.
Yeah, Trevor. Let's start with the bracket. So as some of you may know, we started our own 808s and Ankle Breaks edition of March Madness, in which we picked 32 lyrics, pinned them up against each other, and so we got the results from the first round for you. So, in the Sweet 16, the first matchup, Gimme the Loot, Notorious B.I.G. facing off against way back Travis Scott. Solid little matchup for you there.
Yeah. Both of those were predicted. Those were the higher seeds, upsets yet.
Yep. And then moving on from there, we got Back to Back from Drake going up against Kept Back, Gucci Mane. First upset, he took on, I think it was Fife Dawg in the first round. So I was a little surprised, but I wasn't too surprised.
I mean,
because that Gucci Mane.
That Gucci Mane song, One It's Hard, yeah, and that, the yeah. Ben Simmons hit him with the left hand. Like, it's a smooth line. Like,
yeah, it is.
We should have seen it coming. Also, you got to think. Fife Dawg and Muggsy Bogues, also, you know, some throwbacks. I don't think we have a lot of, you know, people over the age of 24 following 808 and Ankle Breaks.
21.
Yeah, honestly. So, like, I guess it kind of does make sense, but still, you know, an upset nonetheless.
Yeah. And then moving on to the next division, the 1 seed, The Heart Part 4 by Kendrick Lamar, taken on Leveling Up by Fabolous in the next round. And then Fire Squad, the 3 seed by J. Cole, taken on The Work Remix by A Boogie. I was shocked.
Upset.
I was really upset.
Honestly, that was some bullshit.
It was.
First of all, y'all some haters.
Yeah. Because that Royce lyric is fire. I love that Royce lyric. Man,
tough. You hate to see it. You hate to see the good ones go early. but it happens.
Yeah.
You know, I will say A Boogie did have a hard line. You know, Paul George, I pace her. Like, I get it. It's clever. So, you know, again, it's also, you know, name value.
Right.
Paul George, A Boogie versus, you know, Royce da 5'9
and J.R. Smith. Yeah.
It's just like popularity vote. Sometimes it happens.
It happens. And then moving on, next division there, Chum, Earl Sweatshirt, another 1 seed is taken on Kendrick Lamar. The Heart Part 2, a little bit of an upset. That was the 5 seed. Went up against JID's Never in
Honestly,
the first round.
Like, I didn't really know which one to make the 4 seed.
Yeah.
There.
I thought it was really close.
Because it's newer. So that ended up being a close matchup.
Yeah, I think The Heart Part 2 won by like 1 or 2 votes anyway. So, and then we got Burn, Meek Mill. I was pretty surprised that one won because Nicki was ahead for a while.
Yeah.
And then Meek kind of came back in the second half, taking on Drake. How about that? Thank me now. Mm-hmm. And then moving on, our last one seed, Empire State of Mind, Jay-Z taking on Drake, 0-100, the four seed.
That's an interesting one.
I'm very interested to see how that one turns out. And then we got the three seed Nikes by Frank Ocean taking on Kanye, Can't Tell Me Nothing. I'm also interested to see how that one goes.
That's also a big one for sure.
So that is the updated bracket for you guys. We'll start releasing those probably when this episode drops, sometime soon after that. We'll let you know. You know, we got the plug on Twitter, so stay off of that. But, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Slap or Skip.
So, if you're new here, Slap or Skip is our weekly segment where we take, you know, the hottest singles of the week, you know, whatever we found online, some new hip-hop for your head tops. And we give it a slap if we like it, a skip if, you know, we're probably not going to give it too much replay value, and a meh if it's somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. So let's do this, Trevor.
Let's do it.
First on the list, we got BJ the Chicago Kid, his most recent single, Close. What'd you think of this one, Trevor?
I'm going to hit this one with a slap. Very smooth R&B bop from BJ the Chicago Kid. I really like the instrumental on this one, especially. It's got this very nice, pleasant piano and pad combination. And I love the hints of guitar he puts in there, too. I think it's a surprising little mix. Great vocals and delivery. Pretty solid love song. I don't think anything necessarily stands out lyrically, but it's just a really good song to listen to. So I'm going to give it a slap.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a meh. I mean, everything that Trevor said is correct. I think this, in terms of, you know, the qualifications for a good R&B song, I guess this has it. My thing is just, the biggest issue for me was the lyrics. I felt like, as Trevor said, they didn't stand out. And for me, that kind of hung it up for me at meh, where it's just like, you know, if we're going to make an R&B song, let's try and just find something that makes our lyrics at least stand out. I just feel like the lyrics didn't really stand out. And I think BJ, the Chicago Kid, he's also capable lyrically.
So absolutely.
I think he could have done a little better on this. Right. Still a solid track, though.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, there's no red flags that make this, you know, unlistenable. So listen to it for yourself.
Yeah.
Next, we got Jacquees featuring Lil Baby, Your Peace. What did you think of this one, Trevor?
I'm going to give this one a meh. A very impressive vocal performance from Jacquees, as always. We finally get an original song from him. Pretty simple guitar and pad combination here, but I really like the drum pattern on this one. He has those three kicks early in the beat and then the snare combo with that too. I think it works really well. It sounds a little bit retro, but I think Lil Baby sounds so out of place on this. Like that, it doesn't ruin it, but that's the biggest drawback for me. It's like you could have done without Lil Baby, and I think you would have had a really good song here, but it's a meh for me.
I'm actually going to give this a slap, surprisingly. While you said, you know, you didn't like Lil Baby on this, I think because the beat has a little bit of bounce,
right,
it ended up working. Like, I found myself enjoying Lil Baby's flow and hearing him, you know, attempt to hop on an R&B track. Overall, you know, the message here isn't any stronger than, say, the last song from BJ the Chicago Kid, but I also expected less lyrically from Jacquees and Lil Baby. So with that, in terms of the sound, you know, the instrumental's great. Lil Baby does solid. The hook, I think, is pretty good from Jacquees, even though the whole idea of, you know, being your lover's piece and them being your piece is kind of like, in my opinion, it's a little antiquated just depending on, like, the context of it. I don't necessarily love the idea of being like, you're supposed to be my piece.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't like the idea of me saying that to you.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I'm still gonna give it a slap. It's a solid track. Next we got Logic with his latest single. I think he dropped multiple songs.
He dropped a soundtrack for like his book or something,
okay.
I think.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, this is not a part of that.
Okay, this is a single, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. What do you think of this one, Trevor?
So I have a lot to say about this one, and I'm going to give it a skip. But you need to hear me out, because I know we're consistently Logic haters on this podcast. But
I love Logic. What are you talking about?
Stop.
Logic is a talented
that's cap.
MC.
You know that's cap. But this just, I think there's a lot going on here. The instrumental I really like, but the drums are just way too muddy for me. Like, okay. I just don't think they fit the melody as well as maybe a more natural sounding drum pattern would.
But what about the peace, love, and positivity?
See, like, this is where it gets dicey for me. Because Logic, I think, falls back on his same themes too much. Where, like, he almost just runs out of ways to say the same thing over and over again.
No, 100%.
And, you know, he gives you the corny bars, as always.
The Verizon line?
Yeah.
Okay, read it.
Switch up the plan like that homie that went from Verizon to Sprint.
Then he follows it up. No, he follows
he
it up.
He does follow it up.
Can you hear me now? That's the next line. So it's like he gave you a little a punchline followed by another punchline.
Yeah, it's just typical. It's what you expect from him. The hook, I guess, is a little refreshing, but it's still pretty bland. The second verse, I will say, is much stronger than the first, but then he kind of falls back on those same themes that he always talks about. He talks about being biracial again. He talks about the peace, love, and positivity thing, and I think he mimics J. Cole a lot in the second verse. So I really wanted to like this song. I did. I just don't think Logic gives me enough here to actually like. So that's why I gave it a skip.
I'm gonna give this one a meh. I'm not gonna be as harsh.
See,
as Trevor.
I was where you were for a long time, but
a lot of what Trevor said is pretty much true, so I don't have to address this. I guess the best way I could explain this is this track reminded me of Eminem's Walk on Water in a way,
okay,
where it's almost like at the beginning of the track, Logic is kind of talking about, like, once you're this successful, you know, do you really have to, you know, keep going or something? And he's saying that's not him. Which I kind of like that, and I also like that the sound of this track, it's very reminiscent to, you know, some Under Pressure stuff.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, that's
probably
the only Logic project I can say I thoroughly enjoyed. So it reminds me of that sound, but as Trevor said with the messages, it's like, positivity is great. No one is going to call me out for hating on positivity, but, like, when you just keep on, like, doing this every track,
just beating
where it's
a
like,
dead horse.
Yeah, where it's like, one, everybody knows positivity is a good thing. So, like, and I don't want to sound like a hypocrite because, you know, there's so much violence in hip hop that, like, I guess this makes it unique that he's trying to make this approach. But it's the way in which he does it, as you said, it's just, it's the same, rehashing the same thing every time. Like, the singles that he released before his last project, before Bobby Tarantino 2, there was one single that did the same thing.
I think it was Every Day.
Like, and I think Logic is talented, but at this point, there's just only so much I can take.
He's just running out.
He doesn't really switch up the flows at all on this. It's just kind of just, let me go for 5 minutes with the same kind of triplet flow, similar to how J. Cole uses his flows on Middle Child. Overall, it's just not enough for me to give it a slap.
Right.
I respect positivity, but don't shove it down my throat.
Yeah.
Please. Next, we got Injury Reserve featuring Amine, Jailbreak the Tesla. What do you think of this one, Trevor?
I'm going to give
this one was wild.
This one is wild. I'm giving this one a slap, and this beat is just crazy. It's very electronic-like. You get these really plucky percussion sounds. That 808 is so aggressive. It kind of reminds me of Yeah Right by Vince Staples.
For sure.
That was the first thing I thought of when I heard it. And I really like the robotic auto-tune that they use on their voices. That filter just sounds really cool. Solid verse from Amine. Super aggressive flow. I think the midsection of the track where it's just like the car noises, I think that drags on a little bit too long, but I don't think it takes away. It's just a crazy track to listen to. So it's a slap for me.
Yeah, definitely a slap over here too. As Trevor said, you can kind of compare this to Vince Staples, his whole electronic project with Big Fish Theory. It has that same type of feel where it's blending hip hop with electronica, and it does it very well.
Very well.
Very well. Mm-hmm. The beat is banging, as Trevor said. In terms of, you know, the concept behind it, that's what I really love. The idea of Jailbreak the Tesla. Like, I always, you know, talk about, I'm kind of sick of, you know, hearing the same concepts over and over again rehashed. I've never heard anyone talk about jailbreaking a car before.
Yeah, for real.
I've never heard someone take the idea that, you know, or the thing that everybody was doing in middle school and early high school with their iPhones, pretty much hacking it to, you know, maximize its capabilities past, you know, what's legal. To do that with a car. Like, that's just a crazy
great
idea
concept.
To me. Amine has a great line that I think he's used something similar before where but the lyric is, your engine go vroom and my engine go, and then
it's
just
pause,
silence. I just love that line.
Yeah, me too.
And Injury Reserve, overall, I love his flow. It's like his aggressiveness matches the beat.
Yeah,
that's probably my
absolutely.
Best way to explain it. So for that reason, it's a slap. Next on the list we got G Count. I actually have not listened to any G Count songs.
Neither have I.
Off the top of my head, at least. G Count featuring Pusha T, Pope vs. Pontiff. What'd you think of this one?
I'm going to give this one a meh. Pretty basic piano melody, pretty basic chord progression, bouncy trap beat. I feel like G Count sounds like he's chasing the beat for a good portion of his verse, maybe more towards the back half. I don't really like the filter that he has on his voice. It doesn't really work for me, but I think Pusha kind of saves this song a little bit. I think there's nothing special that he delivers necessarily in his verse, but I like his flow. You know, Push has just got a great rapping voice. I like his delivery a lot, so it's an all right track.
Yeah, I'm going to give this a meh as well. I don't have a whole lot to say about G-Count on this track. I feel like he sounds pretty, I don't want to say just like, I guess standard. Like, yeah. Where it's like, it's not necessarily, it's definitely not bad rapping, but there's not any, you know, lyrics or flows here that make me really think like, whoa, G-Count's someone that I got to look out for. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you're a G-Count fan, you're listening to this and you're saying, what are you talking about? This is hard. But from what I heard, it wasn't anything particularly crazy. I think Pusha T's verse is solid. I think when you're just as good of a rapper as Pusha T is, even when you have a mailed-in verse, it's going to be solid. Yeah. And I think that's what this kind of feels like. I feel like there's no real direction with this track. No. But I also could have just not been listening well enough. Mm-hmm. So listen for yourselves and decide on that. Last track for you, Vory, You Got It. What'd you think of this one, Trevor?
I'm going to give this one a skip. He was on the Rich the Kid album, so that's why I thought I would include this track on here. His delivery is very smooth. The beat is really smooth. It's this really airy kind of R&B crossover type beat. I think he sounds a lot like Post Malone.
Yep,
like so much like Post Malone.
That's why I just smirked.
Yeah, like literally exactly like Post Malone. These trills that they put in his voice.
I was going to say Post Malone with like 20-30% of Party Next Door's audio engineering. Like, it's kind of like he's not 100% Post Malone, but there's clearly an influence there.
Right. So it just sounds too much like something Post Malone would put out. Like even, for me to enjoy.
Even the way he puts his yes on the end of lines, like a bunch of rappers use yes, but the way he does it just sounds like Post Malone.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think we're gonna end up seeing this for years to come. That's just how music works. Once you see a streaming giant like Post Malone, like Travis Scott, you're gonna see impressionists all
definitely.
The time. So, you know, I mean, you could already argue Juice WRLD has an influence from Post Malone, but like this is very apparent. Like,
yeah, it's blatant. Yeah. Like, listen to it for yourself. I thought it was Post Malone at first. Like,
for sure.
It just sounded a lot like him, but that's why I gave it a skip. So,
that's going to conclude our slapper skip. One thing we're going to try and do from now on is start, you know, promoting local artists as well as, you know, lesser known artists. So this week, what we're going to do is we're going to play a track from our artist of the week, Chris Focus. The track is called Used To. Very hard, lyrical for sure. He actually goes to UMass Amherst. So definitely listen to the track and hit the link. Follow him on social media as well.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back.
Swear I'm in this shit forever like some tattoo ink. Bars plentiful like water out the sink. Sick shit that I think need a shrink. Cash drops to the plug. Backseat of the hoopty look like back of the Brinks. Tryna cop a chain, gold links. All ice like a rink. I can see it in a blink. People tell me daily the flow be crazy. That shit amaze me but never faze me. And lately a baby, she call me baby. Fuck on the daily when she be wavy. Nigga, you can hate me. You can think you made me. You gon' wanna fade me, but you could never face me. Really, you just mad cause you lazy. Well, I be getting pacey to me. They be business as soon as I get it. I'm looking to flip it. I'm punching my ticket. My niggas with it and winning. Said this shit from the beginning. I'm finna make me a killing. People, they look at that nigga soon as he walk in the building. Focus, don't deal with opinion. Put in my women, I'm linen. Beat it, I mean it. My nigga, I need it. My family winning, your people are looking defeated. I'm making it clear that it's more than a million needed. I'm saying that be critical. Being broke, that shit pitiful. Get it rich, be habitual. All my money divisible. Make it flip like reciprocal. Typical niggas don't get the visual. Keep the cash at a minimal. I'm talking about some 10, 20s. Count it. That's the shit I'm used to. Women always want me. Some shit that I'm not used to. Yeah, I've been
in my... And we're back. It's Album Talk, ladies and gentlemen. So, last Friday, Rich Forever's Rich the Kid dropped The World Is Yours 2, a follow-up to his... is it an album? Is it a mixtape? Last year, it's got mixtape vibes to it, but it's got commercial advertising with it. So it's kind of like, I don't really know what you want to call it. I'll call it an album, just to keep it simple.
Yeah.
And Nav also dropped an album, Bad Habits, which... also has this feeling of like mixtape-ness where it's
he dropped a deluxe version for it
very soon. Like I've never seen
like literally
a deluxe
3 days after.
Come out like 3 days later. But we'll talk about both of those. So I guess we'll start with just the simple stuff.
Yeah.
What were your initial expectations, Trevor? From both projects.
For either of them, I didn't really have any expectations in place. For Rich, I was hoping that he would be able to supersede The World Is Yours, the first edition. But I just think he gives you more of the same on here. Not a whole lot stands out to me. Nav, I had no idea what to expect. I don't personally listen to Nav a whole lot. I've heard very popular singles of his in the past, which have been good, not necessarily because of him, but I thought Nav and Rich the Kid just really hit below their weight, if they had any weight at all. Like,
I'll say my initial expectation before we go further into the ideas. To say they punch below their weight, I guess that really depends on what you were expecting going into this.
Right.
For me, Nav, I've as Trevor said, I'm also not the biggest fan of Nav. Yeah, so he's almost like, I think at his worst, he can sound like the little brother in the track, as you can see on Astroworld with
Yosemite.
Yosemite, mm-hmm. Where it's like, he gets this verse added at the end, the volume, the mixing's down. I don't know what
whose fault that is,
but like the mixing's down, so it didn't help. And then it just feels like his verse is thrown in at the end of the track, even on his own album at times that happens. But
yeah.
I'm rambling because we're talking about expectations.
Yeah.
So let me back it up, and we'll just have to chop a lot of this.
Yeah.
But, even Nav himself came out and said his debut album was trash. So I guess with that being said, like, I didn't have any expectations for this album. I didn't expect it to be
solid. I'm going to go with you on that one, too.
Rich the Kid, The World Is Yours, the original, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of what I enjoyed was how many, features were on it.
It was like an all-star lineup, basically.
Yeah. And I think Rich the Kid, he kind of followed that same pattern in this. He has 16 features on 14 tracks, which just sounds kind of wild. Or maybe
I think it's the other way around.
Yeah. So he has 14 features on 16 tracks, which is kind of a lot. There isn't a feature on every song, but there's multiple features on some tracks, which adds up. And Nav is kind of the same way, where both these albums have a lot of features. So I guess we'll go into, did it live up to your expectations, either album?
I think Rich the Kid was exactly where I expected it to be. Mostly because I was hoping he would supersede it. I didn't think he would, just because he's just got this brand already as a rapper. He recycles flows, recycles topics. Like, I just don't think he gives you a whole lot here that's worth really mentioning. He does have some good songs on here, and he does have some solid solo performances. I really like the intro. I thought the intro was one of the best tracks on here. Mm-hmm. But there's also times where I feel like he just doesn't quite fit. Like the Miguel and Ty Dolla $ign song, I like that he tries something new with that. But he just sounds really out of place on his own song.
That was the perfect example.
And I feel like there's a couple songs like that, too, where he just sounds like he doesn't just fit in.
For the Miguel track, I wouldn't even say that I would go even further than just saying he feels out of place. He literally ruins the track.
Yeah.
He ruins the track on the album. It's got this perfect vibe going. Mm-hmm. Miguel's singing over this soulful instrumental.
It's
perfect. Then Rich the Kid comes in rapping about bragging. This is supposed to be a love song, mind you.
But
rapping about bragging to his friends about his girl's about her box.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that this is a love song and that you're explaining this in the song. Like, I'm not going to try and pretend that, men probably don't brag about, their sexual experiences, even with their significant others. But if this is supposed to be a love song, why would you include that?
Yeah.
And he still hits you with those typical flows.
Yeah. So really, I think it was right where I expected it to be, which, like, it doesn't make the album, like, better or worse. I think it was just a pretty mediocre showing for him. Pretty sea level. I think he's just coasting here.
But did you say any of your favorite tracks on here?
Yeah, so I said the intro I really liked.
And was that it?
I liked Racks Today, too. He has two songs titled with the word Racks in it, too, on this album. I did like the song with Tory Lanez a little bit, which is rare because I'm not really a huge Tory Lanez fan. But I think Tory brings a lot of energy to that track. But other than that, I just don't think there's a whole lot to take away from this. Splashin' was a pretty solid single. But then again, pretty generic Rich the Kid song. The other single, Four Phones, didn't really stand out to me either. So, I don't know. I think he's just, like, right where you would expect him to be. So.
And for, I guess I'll do Rich the Kid and then we'll go Nav for tracks. Yeah, TikTok, I feel like that was really, in terms of moments in the album, I think low-key that's the best moment on the entire album. I think Tory Lanez really shows out on this track.
Definitely.
He shows, why why he's so cocky, why he always wants to fight with all these other artists, because he's supremely talented. In that track, he has a line. See, like, I love when you can take your criticism and find a way to, you know, make a clever little pun about it. He says, you know, everyone's saying that I'm biting, but I'll bite your like, that's just, that's a clever line. And the way he just skates over this beat is just, it's amazing. I love the flows on it. So that was easily my favorite moment on this album. I also liked Save That. By Rich, also on the Rich the Kid album. But with this track, I feel like, again, it's not really about Rich the Kid here.
Yeah.
Like, I think the beat, it's just, it sounds like Drake's Portland instrumental, just done much better mixing.
Right.
And the beat is so well done that, you know, Rich the Kid doesn't have to do too much on here.
Yeah.
His hook just kind of bounces with the beat well. I mean, yeah, the hook as well as, you know, his flow on the verses is solid, but he just doesn't really give anything special.
Yeah, definitely.
But for the Nav album, what were your favorite tracks? If
I had a couple, but not necessarily because of Nav. I really like Tussin, but all because of Young Thug, even though he said that he wanted to hook up with his auntie.
I was about to say, like, that's the most memorable part about the album, and it's not something that you really want it to be memorable for.
And he just snaps on the hook for no reason. Like, I think he just delivers, like, a really strong hook on Tussin.
I don't even think he snapped on this hook. I think it just shows the difference, the gap between Nav and Young Thug.
Yeah.
Like, Young Thug gave a, if you read the lyrics, it's a mediocre hook, but he's just got this, you know, this charisma to him that, like, even at Young Thug's, like, worse, it's still better than Nav, because Nav is just not going to give you that type of charisma and that type of whoa.
No,
like
not at
if,
all.
If a Nav feature comes in an album, I'm not like, yo, I got to zone in right now. When Young Thug comes onto an album, Young Thug, you immediately pay attention.
Yes.
And, you know, that's the biggest way to explain my issues with both of these albums.
Yeah. No, and it's the same thing with the Weeknd song, too, because, like, while the Weeknd, I thought his part wasn't, like, amazing by any means.
It was a lot better.
He clearly takes over that track. Like, that track is practically his.
That track, literally, it goes hook, verse, all from The Weeknd.
Yep.
Then Nav
pops on it.
He literally got Yosemite'd on his own album.
Yep. I don't think that was the only time either. And then, you know, the Meek Mill feature was, like, pretty mediocre, I thought. And then, holy crap, the hook by Nav on Tap. Horrible.
Oh, yeah. Tap.
I was, like, turning around. I was like, is somebody behind me, like, whispering in my ear right now? What's going on? But, yeah, they just consistently, both of them get outshined on both of their projects. And that's a huge point of contention, I think, for both of them. So,
So I guess with my next question with all that is, have both these artists stagnated?
I think, Nav has stagnated since his first project. Mm-hmm. Like, he just, I don't think he shows any variety, any progression at all. It's just, like, consistently been just, like, pretty bad to mediocre albums. And I know that's disrespectful, but, like, let's be honest, Nav said
his debut album was bad.
Well, and he hits it off, like, the same way every time, because he just continuously underperforms. I don't even know, like, what he can actually overperform on, because He's so mediocre and boring.
The only thing I give Nav credit for is that he's a producer. But for the most part, when I looked over the album credits, it didn't look like he produced.
Not a whole lot on this one.
I don't think I saw anything that he produced, but maybe I missed one. But I don't recall seeing him producing anything on this album. And that's supposed to be his calling card.
Yeah. And with Rich, I think his first project was much better than this. But only because that was the first version of this album. I think you really got The World Is Yours Part 2, where it sounded like it was just all part of the same collection.
Recycled it, pretty much. He was like, I think he went into the same, him and his label went into it the same way, where I think they probably recognize that Rich the Kid is flawed as an artist. You know, he doesn't, in terms of concept, he's not going to give you anything special. In terms of flows, he really only has two or three.
Yeah.
In terms of themes, he talks about racks a lot. As you said, two of his songs
have the word racks in it.
It's really about racks and hoes, pretty much, for him, which is a lot of hip-hop, but it's about how can you say it so it sounds different, and he really can't do that.
Yeah.
So I think what their strategy is, let's pump Rich the Kid with expensive beats and just top tier features. Let's get Young Thug on here. Yep. Let's get Miguel on here. And let's hope that, let's get Tory Lanez on here. And let's hope that that's enough to hide the fact that, you know, Rich the Kid is the worst part of this album.
Yeah.
Like, there's give me one Rich the Kid verse that you remember or enjoyed in this project.
Like, I really can't. The only song I can think of is the intro. Like, that was really, for me, his strongest solo performance.
Yeah, he just, he doesn't really seem to even want to attempt to give you any more than, you know, the surface level, like, the basics that you need to be considered rapping.
Yeah.
Like, he literally gives you the bare minimum.
Right.
And you can say that with Nav too, where it's like, yeah, sure, Nav, you can give him credit that he's doing melodies, but it's also sounds like flows that we've heard from A Boogie and Travis Scott.
Yeah.
So it's like, my issue with these is like, how much further can you really go with this?
Yeah.
Can you just consistently keep on putting out these projects that are mediocre, mm-hmm. even when you're pumping in all these features and all that?
Yeah. And I don't want to be disrespectful, but I saw a tweet today about Nav, and he said he gets like upset because the paparazzi doesn't take pictures of him. Like, he said that he like puts out, like, he puts all this jewelry on and nobody's taking pictures of him. And I truly believe that Nav could fall off the place of the earth, fall off the face of the earth, nobody would notice. He could drop, this could be the last album he drops and nobody would be asking the question next year. Yo, when's Nav dropping his next album?
What I will say is, I think you're incorrect, because I think guys like him and French Montana can also be spoken to about this. I think other artists in Hollywood would notice. I think these guys, like, for some reason, guys like Drake and all of them, they like Nav. So, like, Nav is going to always have a chance with music because he's friends with these artists, and that's why he's going to get these features.
That's true. That's a good point.
But I think I just want to wrap this up with my one thought that I had when trying to figure out how to conjoin these two albums and discuss. One thing I thought about is with features on albums, you know, some people try and overrate the importance of you know, not having features, as you can see with J. Cole fans.
Yep.
Some people look at even Travis Scott and they try and you know, attack him for his features. But I think there's a huge difference between, you know, an Astroworld, a Kanye West project, and these, where, like, I feel like with Astroworld, it feels like, I in my review for Astroworld, I compared it to almost like the Odyssey, where, you know, Travis Scott, I feel like he's taking the best of the best and kind of bringing it into his world, and he's leading and making it into this streamable giant.
Yeah.
While I feel like with Rich the Kid and Nav, it's more like, you know, we're in a small sailboat and we're just like, let's load it up with featured artists and hope that they can just help me swim while I just lay on top of you.
That's
guys.
A good
that's,
point.
That's kind of probably the best way I can explain this, where it's just like, they're not really doing anything to add to the features that they're bringing in the tracks. They're just kind of like, yo, can you guys just hop on this and save me?
Yep.
That's how it ends up feeling.
Yeah, Trav's features, I think they complement him, whereas the other two, they substitute.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the biggest takeaway.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, if you had to choose, which album takes the cake?
Definitely The World Is Yours, too. I just think there's more memorable moments on there. Bad Habits is just a snooze fest for
me. Yeah, I'd agree with that. You wrote about Nav this week. So
that'll be coming up tomorrow, I believe.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get that published tomorrow. Also, Oliver Sampson, he wrote a review for It's the Kid. So if you like reading, that should be, both of those should be out sometime this week. So you can look out for those.
Yeah.
But let's move on to basketball.
Let's do it. Welcome to Ankle Breaks, everybody. This is the basketball portion of the show. We got our first segment for you, the Fast Break, our little news rundown, NBA events, injury news, updates, stuff like that. So kicking us off, the Celtics signed center Greg Monroe to a 10-day contract after 38 games this season with the Toronto Raptors. Bucks veteran Pau Gasol is going to be out for a month with an ankle injury. And in their 118-115 loss to the Sixers last Wednesday, Marcus Smart was fined $50,000 for shoving Joel Embiid, flop or not. This is a horrible injury, by the way. Yusuf Nurkic is out for the remainder of the season after suffering a gruesome compound fracture in his leg. The Blazers big man was having a career season, averaging 15.4 points per game, 10.3 rebounds, and 1.4 blocks, in which the ref proceeded to trip over Nurkic's leg. If you watch the clip of the injury, I advise you don't, but that's why we got to trash the refs. Heat legend Chris Bosh had his jersey number retired last night. The big man won two championships with the Heat and averaged 18 points per game, 7.8 rebounds, and 0.9 blocks on 49% shooting while in Miami. And this week, both the Boston Celtics and Los Angeles Clippers clinched playoff spots. Great news for the Clippers because everybody thought they were just done from the beginning of the season, I think.
Yeah, I mean, now it's looking like... Well, I think the 8 in the West are pretty much locked in. Yeah. The Thunder could end up being the A-seed.
Yeah.
Like, it's very possible.
Yeah, they are not having a good streak right now. But moving on from there, we got your winners and losers. In the East, the Magic continue their playoff push. They sit in the 8 spot right now with 6 straight wins, and the Washington Wizards slide with 5 straight losses. And in the West, the Clippers, like we mentioned, are just on a tear. They have 6 straight wins also, and the last-place Suns continue sliding with 4 in a row. That's the fast break. Let's talk Lonzo. Lonzo Ball.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week for Lonzo Ball. So earlier, or was it last week?
I think it was last week.
So last week, out that LeVar Ball's one of his best friends, apparently, that is running helping run Big Baller Brand, apparently was stealing money from Lonzo, LaMelo, and LiAngelo, essentially taking money out of their pockets.
Mm-hmm.
Then follow that up, Lonzo Ball, he removes all photos of him and his father on Instagram, and I think anything involving, you know, the ZO2s.
Yeah.
Also, he goes and puts out a tattoo. He puts out a picture showing that he changed his Big Baller Brand tattoo to some red and black dice.
They look horrible, by the way. The tattoo is awful.
You could tell it clearly was like, what can you do to turn this around, bro? And he was like, I can make him some dice.
Yeah.
And then that's how you got that tat.
Yeah.
The last thing I forgot to mention was it's looking like Lonzo Ball will be signing with Nike as well, which is kind of good for someone that's had injuries in the past 2 years.
Right.
So let's kind of talk about this.
Starting this off, LeBron James, the coach for the Los Angeles Lakers, came out and said about Lonzo's recent episodes, disputes with Big Baller Brand. He said, whatever the kid decides to do, whatever brand he comes with next, if it's Nike, we obviously would welcome him. I would definitely welcome him. I love the kid regardless of what shoes he had on, but we shall see. And adding on to that, he said, I love the fact that he's taking control of his stuff. I think there was another word in there, but that's what the quote says online. I mean, that's what's really, really dope to me. Once I saw the story, I just seen a kid turning into a man. This is my career and I'm taking this. I had enough. If I'm not going to be successful, I'm not going to be successful on my own terms. Do we agree with LeBron? Do we agree with him?
That it's good that
Is it a good decision for Lonzo Ball to ditch Big Baller Brand, take control of his own career?
You know, the only way I can talk about the Lakers is as a Lakers fan.
Yeah.
This is phenomenal news.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. You know, LeVar Ball this season, I think his distraction was definitely a lot more understated. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm thinking back to his rookie year, especially where Lonzo Ball was kind of a target in the league because of his father.
Yeah.
His father also, you know, was... No, not his father, but his father, actually. His father was essentially forcing him to wear these shoes, which, you know, there's not necessarily any proof that they led to, you know, his injuries.
Yeah.
But I do know that Nike is kind of the best in terms of, you know, prepping the conditions for your shoes to make sure, you know, they're fitting you and only helping you, not hindering you.
Yeah.
I doubt the Big Baller Brand had the labs that Nike has to do that.
Had the technology, the designs in place to do the same thing. And, you know, as an outsider, I'll just add on to what you said earlier. I love that. I love that he's doing this. I love that he's breaking off from this aspect of his life because it really just seemed to be anchoring him down in
a
bad way.
I will also say it's also still his father. So, you know, obviously I don't know Lonzo Ball, but the idea of, you know, going against your father, that's definitely not easy.
Yeah,
and that's probably something that's going to him as well as both his brothers. LaMelo, he tweeted something about thanks for letting us be free or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's like I don't know how I personally feel about seeing, you know, black boys feel like they need to push themselves away from their father.
Mm-hmm.
That's never anything that I would want to see. But, you know, if that's what is better for them, I guess that's a good thing.
Right.
But still, you know that can't be easy.
Yeah,
that's
no, definitely not.
Just so conflicting,
not. Yeah, obviously
them.
It's difficult, but I think it's 100% the right move because, you know, since he was in college, since he was in high school, there was all this buzz around Lonzo Ball. And, like, going into his rookie seasons, like, when you saw the advertisements for the Lakers games, guess whose face was plastered up there? Lonzo. And I don't know if it was – I don't think he placed – his own hype on him. I really think LeVar contributed to that hype, like, way more so than he should have. Because, you know, Lonzo, his rookie season wasn't bad, but it wasn't anything that made everybody go, like, wow, like, he really lived up to expectations. I think we will see Lonzo become a great player, but I think he really needed to get the weight off his shoulders about this whole big baller brand situation. Because this will lead into the next question. Do you think this relationship he has with the big baller brand has had a positive or a negative impact on his career so far?
Easily negative.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty easy to say a negative. One in the fact that let's not kid ourselves. Big baller brand was not some type of, I don't care what LeVar Ball said, there was no way they were really selling shoes like that.
No,
there's no way you were selling it at the volume to make Lonzo really believe that he's better off being with big baller brand than with a Nike, where they can make you, you know, a star because, you know, guys like Michael Jordan signed to Nike.
Yep.
Guys like Charles Barkley, they signed to Nike and, you know, made something special, but made Nike even more special with their brand attached to it.
Right.
So you can't sit here and pretend like that's not gonna be better than having your own brand. Yeah, you got 100% of the profits, but if you're getting probably really barely any profits
yeah.
from your shoes, then how is that really helping, especially if they're overpriced?
Yeah, and I don't think anybody took big baller brand seriously from the start, and that was also a huge issue where, like, Lonzo, I think it reflected on him very poorly, where it, like, made him look like as much of a joke.
Yeah.
As the brand was itself.
I also do want to add this. I do remember in Summer League, Lonzo's rookie year, he had 30 points in the game that he wore some Kobe's. Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, where he took off the baller brand shoes and then he just went off in Nike. So,
yeah.
You know, we'll see if he signed. Like, right now, it's looking like it's speculated that it's going to be Nike. Lonzo even posted on Instagram.
Very stylistic. Yeah. Nike stylistic, like, Instagram post. Is this the end of big baller brand?
Probably.
Is this it? Probably.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
And
probably for the best.
Yeah, and that is the end of our Lonzo talk. The Lakers shouldn't get as much talk as they do. I'm sorry for non-Lakers fans that, you know, get sick of me talking.
I wouldn't consider this Lakers talk.
Yeah.
It's Lonzo talk.
But
slightly different.
Let's wrap things up. We're you know, we're counting down the days to the playoffs at this point.
Yeah.
We still got some regular season to go. One thought I was having this week, and, you know, some people might hate me for this, but, like, I'm at the point in the season where I think also, you know, the March Madness tournament, it kind of helps with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I just haven't necessarily had that drive to tune into the NBA as much
yeah.
as I did, say, 3 months ago. And I was thinking about this recently. And I was like, even with all these big numbers, you know, they don't necessarily draw me in to watch every single time now. Probably because at this point I'm just almost desensitized to the fact that James Harden can score 60.
Up, yeah.
But I do want to get into some talk about, you know, these towards the end of the regular season, what the fuck stat lines.
Yeah.
And how important are they at the end of the day?
Yeah.
So the three, I guess, case studies I could put out is, you know, James Harden, he just scored.
So James Harden tied his career high of 61 points in a win over the Spurs 4 days ago. And then, like you said, Devin Booker.
Yeah, Devin Booker, he had a, not a career high, but he did have 59 points.
Yeah.
In a loss.
Yeah.
In a loss
by
to,
like, 25
yeah,
and
a
or
loss
something.
To the Jazz by 20 plus.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think the third example here, which is even up to a lesser extent, a team that feels like it's completely irrelevant with the New Orleans Pelicans, you know, Elfrid Payton went on this triple-double streak that
yeah.
I feel like he seems to go on every year when regular
yeah.
season games don't really matter anymore.
Yep.
So, yeah, my first question is, how important are these end-of-the-season numbers? And do these all three of these examples I just gave you, do they weigh differently?
I think they absolutely weigh differently. And I think it only weighs differently in the case of James Harden. because he's in the MVP race right now. It's him and Giannis. I don't think Paul George is in the conversation anymore. And I would even, like, you put up a 61-point game against the Spurs, a playoff team. That, to me, is impressive.
A playoff team that's been playing their best basketball recently in terms of defense.
Yep. And that, to me, is much more impressive than Devin Booker putting up 59 in a 20-plus point loss. Because the Suns are well out of the playoff race. They've been eliminated for a long time now. You know, Elfrid Payton, the triple-double streak, like you said, it happens every season. It's just like you have these bum teams with bum players. Like, does it really matter? Like, Devin Booker should be putting up numbers like that with the team that's around him. So I don't think those are as impressive. But James Harden, I would argue, is different because he is chasing after this MVP award again.
Yeah, how much do you think this last stretch of the season can really sway an MVP vote?
I think it really could, because if the Rockets, because I think they're going to stay in that third spot where they have been. But they, like, since the All-Star break, they've still been on a tear. They've kept winning. And James Harden is single-handedly, like, not single-handedly, but he's a big reason, probably the biggest reason why they were able to dig themselves out of that hole.
Oh, no, that's not even
a question.
He really single-handedly.
Yeah, dug them out of this hole where they were not even in the playoffs. They weren't even in the question.
Right.
And I think, this is my opinion, I think right now, James Harden, I think he's going to win MVP. I think Giannis is the best player in the league. I don't think he's the most valuable. I think James Harden is the most valuable because of his contribution to the Rockets this year. Like, yeah, the Bucks are the number one seed in the East, but the Rockets somehow ended up being the 3 seed in the West.
Yeah, I think James Harden definitely has the most MVP moments, where you can think of games where you scored 60. When you have multiple 60-point games, 60-point games in one season, you're obviously going to be in the MVP candidacy. And it really comes down to, you know, are you going to reward – are you, one, going to give someone that already won the MVP another MVP for putting up? Really, I don't think his numbers are any, like, in terms of the, if you look at just the per games, it's not wildly different than what he did in his previous MVP season. Obviously, you have the crazy 30-point streak.
Yeah, it's just the scoring numbers. Like, I think he's going to break Jordan's scoring record this season. I'm pretty sure. Well, obviously, like, Wilt, duh. But, like, I don't really count that. Wilt was in a completely different era. But, you know, he's on this scoring tear he's on is so much different than his MVP season last year. Giannis is obviously very valuable to the Bucks. Like, there's no way they would be where they are without him.
And also, are we gonna talk about defense?
That's true.
I didn't plan on doing a full MVP conversation here, but I think Harden's biggest case right now is really this end of the season run, which typically, like, I feel like this shouldn't matter, but right now it kind of does, just because they started so bad that he kind of needs this.
And they're on fire. Yeah. They're on fire.
He needs the stretch.
Yeah.
So I think there's a good chance, like, this stretch right here could really sway it to the point where he's full on MVP candidate.
Cause
like, all, or not MVP candidate, he's already a candidate, but full on MVP.
Yeah.
I think all year for me, I was saying, you know, Giannis, because, you know, he's got the better team. They're rolling through the East. Their point differential is so
ridiculous.
Much,
the blowout Bucks.
It's the highest since, like, the 90s Jordan. '90s Jordans. Since the 90s Bulls. But Harden is just making a case, and the fact that they really crawled back to a 3 seed, it speaks volumes. And right
Definitely.
Now, it's kind of just the icing on the cake. But I still feel like sometimes, like, this end of the season where you got all these teams that are either tanking or they're taking their foot off the gas because their playoff spots are already locked in. You can't look past that, I think.
Yeah.
I think you can't look past that. I guess Harden 60 points against the Spurs, you can argue it, but a lot of these other stat lines, a lot of times it's against, you know,
garbage
trash
teams.
Competition or, as we said, in a loss.
Well, I mean, he had another, like, 50-something point game against the Grizzlies, and they lost in overtime.
Yeah.
Like, the Grizzlies are garbage. They're a terrible team. And I think that's a different case, but, like, obviously you got to weigh it differently when you're playing against the Spurs or, like, the Nuggets or any other Western team that's actually in the playoffs. So, and for the guys that are on those teams, that are on those bad teams, it doesn't mean anything to me. It's impressive. But it doesn't mean anything to me. I don't think it has any implications beyond. It's just like, wow, like, he put up 59 points. Oh, they lost by 25.
So. Right. But yeah, that's gonna conclude 808s and ankle breaks. Make sure you check out Trevor's article this week, yep, as well as Oliver's. Check out the site in general. We got plenty of great articles up. I'm just speaking for entertainment. I know we have more outside of that, but I'm the entertainment editor, so
we gotta plug ourselves. Yeah,
let me plug that. You know, Julia Donahue, she put out two good articles this week. She spoke on the college admission scandal.
Yeah,
we're almost done. She spoke on the college admissions scandal earlier this week. And it was a little late, but she kind of put some statistics and stuff behind it to add a little meaning. And she also put out an Us review, which just came out. I saw that. Great movie. Great review. So check that out. But yeah, thanks for listening. 808s underscore A-Breaks on Twitter and Instagram. J. Kerman 98 on both.
Trevor Wilson OG on both.
Thanks for listening.